relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
Really? Is that identity politics at its highest or rather lowest level? That was on the campaign trail from the man who now allegedly wears the title, sadly, of Commander-in-Chief and Chief Executive. I'm Sebastian Gorka. Let's delve a little bit deeper. This is America First One-on-One with a guest who my boss has said, you got to get him in studio on the show. And when Katie says that, we get him on the show. He is a contributor for The Blaze's Fearless with Jason Whitlock. Welcome in studio, Delano Squires.
Thank you for having me.
Can we start? You're an outspoken individual. Last time you were on remotely, we talked about an article you did in The Federalist. Mm-hmm. Let's just start with setting the scene. Mm. Where are race relations in America today, and how would you see their evolution compared to 10 years ago, 5 years ago? Better, worse? Where are we at, and what are the key drivers, Delano?
I feel like they're worse than they were 10 years ago, to be completely honest. I think, obviously, the election of nation's first black president was a watershed moment that even many Republicans, conservatives, says this is a sign of progress for us as a nation. I mean, during the Obama presidency, there were issues that came up. Famously, you know, when the president said that the police in Boston
were stupid.
Yeah, right. Acted stupidly or foolishly, right, arresting, you know, Professor Henry Louis Gates. That was an issue. His comments around Trayvon Martin were an issue for conservatives. And then, obviously, with the election of President Trump, that threw the question of race and racism, I mean, into overdrive. So then the left was saying that the things that the president, you know, said, whether it's about people from certain countries or about immigration and building a wall, those things were racist. So I feel like we teeter back and forth. And now, at a time where, you know, we should, in theory, be further down the road on race, I think it's even worse, because one of the things that's happened is that this current president, President Biden, and the left racialized issues that previously had not been racialized. Two quick examples. One, abortion. Abortion was never framed as an issue to protect low-income black women. But now every time you hear the president talk about it, it's about, well, if Roe is overturned, here are the communities that are going to suffer. And first up in line is always poor black women, women of color. That's a change. And the other one I would say is everything having to do with sort of LGBTQ issues, right? What used to be the gay rights movement and really was pushed forward by, you know, middle class, educated, economically stable white men is now about, you know, transgender women of color who are under attack in our streets and so on and so forth. So I think what the left does is what I've termed, they practice a form of chocolate-covered Marxism.
Wow, I like that. Hang on, I'm going to write that down. I'm going to use that chocolate. I'm going to give you full credit. Chocolate-covered Marxism.
So what they do, they know they have a radical agenda, and they know certain things are going to be easier for people to swallow if the face of those agenda items is not the straight white male.
So it's wrapping. It's
correct.
It's a
correct
fake packaging.
Correct.
To make it fit into existing,
exactly,
identity politics.
Exactly. So what ends up happening is that black people end up getting used, again, on abortion, on LGBT issues, on climate change. Any issue that the left wants to put forward now, you're going to see them wrap it in a black and brown packaging.
Okay, so this is fascinating. We could spend the whole next hour just on that phrase, that the chocolate-covered Marxism. So let's stop at this abortion issue. So, mm-hmm, so you said, and I agree, something which had nothing to do with race, which was really identified with privileged white middle class activists for decades, right? I mean, the feminist movement wasn't working class, wasn't minority based. It was middle class white or upper middle class white. It was the academy, you know, the lounge of the professors. How do we get around this issue of 90+ percent of the black community votes Democrat? An issue like an abortion, which should be a very personal choice, a choice about your values, your ethics, is suddenly radicalized in one direction, racialized by a party. And then when you look at the actual facts, take the politics out of it, you look at the fact that 40% of all abortions are black babies.
Correct.
Despite the fact that the black population is only 12% of the nation. And you go, hang on, there's a factor of four more black abortions. I don't want to be monolithic, but doesn't the black community ever get pissed and say, that's just wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's complex. So there are black voters, many of whom are socially conservative, who are personally, and I'm sure you heard this term, personally pro-life, right?
Yeah.
But politically pro-choice.
Right. That's the classic politicians get out.
Correct.
Right.
And you saw this actually when during the 2020 campaign where particularly older black church going women were seen to be the demographic group that was going to help at that time candidate Joe Biden in South Carolina, for instance, in that primary. And there are a lot of women, particularly in that category. It is a paradox because these are people, again, who, if you ask them whether they think a man can become a woman, they'd probably say no. If you ask them whether they think abortion should be legal up until 9 months, they'd probably say no. But they vote for Democrats anyway. And I think a big part of it is because the one thing that Democrats hold, in my opinion, over the black community is the issue of race and racism. So what they do is they say, well, if you don't vote for us, you're going to get the Republicans, and they're going to take you back to Jim Crow 2.0.
I believe you. Mm-hmm. I, my wife and others who work with who have told me again and again and again these stories of going into these communities, also in the South, behind closed doors, members of the black community saying, yes, this is my view on abortion, on race, on sex, on transgender, but there's no way I could admit in public that I'm a Republican.
Yes.
There's that stigma of the label.
Yes.
Now, you're not a historian, but you follow these issues so closely. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? Because, you know, the Southern strategy is a myth.
Right.
The Democrat Party was the party of the KKK, of lynchings, of standing in schoolhouse doors. You know, it is clear what their heritage is. How did they flip it in terms of PR and communications that, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest's party are now the good guys,
right?
And the party that brought you the first Republican president who emancipated black slaves,
right,
Abraham Lincoln, they're the ones that have the stigma. Have you dug into how that happened?
I think it's been a process over decades. My guess would be that with the election of President Obama, that really solidified the notion that to be black is to support the Democratic Party even more, you know, resolutely than has been the case. Again, you're talking about a shift that's happened over, you know, a number of decades. I actually called the hold that Democrats have over the black community. And the way the Democrats frame sort of black thriving and flourishing and say it's either you're either with us or you're going back in history with the Republicans, I call it the Selma syndrome. And really what it is, it's a fusion of America's racial history, right? Which is why they always talk about Jim Crow 2.0. They talk about Selma.
The Democrat Jim Crow rules.
Right. But it's a fusion of the country's history, which is real. I'm not papering over it in any way, shape, or form, with elements of the Stockholm syndrome, where the person who's captive,
the hostage
sees their fortunes tied to their captor.
Wow.
So anytime the captor is threatened, the hostage feels like something is about to be taken away
from
me.
So does that mean they see the Democrat Party truly as their savior?
In many respects, many people do. Absolutely.
Wow.
Which is why, to your point, they could never see themselves voting for a Republican. Even if they say, yes, I tend to be, you know, conservative on certain issues. Even if you give a list of issues and you strip the parties from them and you say, do you believe this or that? Even if they 9 out of 10 issues, they would lean conservative. There's a part of them that says, I can't vote for this party because they're going to take me back. And threatening the Democratic Party, the party of our first black president, is something that would be an act of betrayal and ultimately to my detriment.
All right, we're 11 minutes in and I've already got the Stockholm Syndrome and chocolate
covered
Selma Syndrome as the Stockholm Syndrome and the chocolate covered Marxism. This is value for money. Follow this guy at Delano Squires on Twitter and The Blaze. If you appreciate our one-on-one shows, don't forget to subscribe. Go to your favorite podcast platform. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka. It's free. Write a review, share the links, and guarantee that you never, ever miss a nanosecond of the show. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you are registered for our Stand With Israel tour. 10 days later this year, we are traveling to the Holy Land with my fabulous colleague here at Salem, Dinesh D'Souza, the director of 2,000 Mules, and his lovely wife, Debbie, to walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. Even if you've been to Israel before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. We're going to be there, the shores of the Sea of Galilee, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the Garden of Gethsemane. I'm not vaccinated, and I'm going, so you can join us too. The number is 855-565-5519 or just go to standwithisraeltour.com. That's 855-565-5519 or just go today. Register right now, standwithisraeltour.com. Dear friends, you know my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing his My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll get $90 off a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. They took over 2 years to develop. They're designed to wear indoor and out. I've already worn out my first pair of My Slippers, and they're made with the same amazing My Pillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue and lined with real suede. Call 800-829-8468. Use promo code Gorka for that massive discount or just go to mypillow.com and click on the radio listener square and put in the secret code G-O-R-K-A. This offer won't last long. You won't regret it. They are the best slippers I have ever owned. And $90 off MyPillow.com. Do it today. Promo code G-O-R-K-A. Okay, so we've discussed the Selma syndrome, the Stockholm syndrome, of the black community, why 90%+ voted not just for a black president, but for a old senile white guy who'd been a machine politician for 47 years out of Delaware. Talk to us about the other side of the aisle.
Yeah.
Talk to us about the strengths or the weaknesses of the GOP, the party of emancipation of Lincoln. I don't want to get too cliched, but I see a party that kind of wrote off minorities. They don't know how to communicate with minorities, whether it's Asian, whether it's black, and they kind of just didn't bother. Is that fair?
I think certainly that's been the case historically. And to some respect, I understand it because, you know, time is the one resource they're not making more of. So as a political party, you want to invest your resources in places where you think you can get a return. I'll say this about today's GOP. If today's GOP, let's say 2024, right? If the candidate in 2024 is going to be a Mitt Romney-esque,
Establishment guy.
I don't think that type of person is going to move the needle. Not in terms of the people that I know personally, but if it's someone more in the, let's say, mold of the current governor of Florida, someone who understands policy, someone who's willing to fight the right fights in the right way with the right people, I think that type of candidate could move the needle. Certainly among Hispanics, because they are starting to move away from the Democratic Party, you know, at a fairly rapid pace. I even think in terms of the black community. So I think if you have the right type of conservative candidate, I could easily see that person getting 25% of the black vote.
But
Yes. But I'll say it this way. I think here's the key. And this is what I would say to friends and family of mine who may be saying, well, I could never vote for a Republican. this is what I would say to them. I would say, I'm not trying to convince you to vote for a Republican. What I'd like you to do is to be clear on what your values are.
Yes.
Understand what you believe and why you believe it. And then as you go out in the marketplace, right, and you look for a political candidate to represent you, because that's all. You're not searching for a pastor. You're not searching for a father. You're not searching for a lover or a friend. You're looking for someone to represent your interests in whatever level of government we're talking about. Know your values, know what you believe and why you believe it, and then you go out and ask yourself, which one of these two or three people is most aligned with the things that I believe, and then vote for that person.
See, there seems to be apparent cognitive dissonance, because it, as an outsider to that community, I see a community that shares my values, mm-hmm. whether it's values to do with family, with the roles of the male or
correct.
Male and female, the importance of education, I would hope. But then I see this kind of disconnect, this cognitive dissonance, and the tribal attitude to, well, but I'm still going to vote Democrat.
Yeah.
How much does reality matter? Because you look at the 4 years of my old boss, mm-hmm. you know, in the White House, President Trump, after, if you look at lowest unemployment for blacks and Hispanics since mm-hmm. record-keeping began, you look at the First Step Act, the first serious, you know, prison reform act in years, if not decades, mm-hmm. which should give him some credit with this population. But it seems nugatory. Yes, he got more votes, but does hard work for a given community actually pay off the dividends of popularity 2 or 4 years later?
I would say absolutely yes, because failing to do that means you're guaranteed to not ever get any of those votes. You can't get votes from people if you don't show up and talk to them. I'll say this, even what you mentioned with President Trump, all right? If you all were consulting me 3-4 years ago, right? It's fine you didn't, but if you were, here's what I would say. As somebody who's lived in and around cities my entire life, I would be more interested in hearing the Trump campaign tout the efforts of Operation Legend than the First Step Act.
Okay, explain that.
So I'm sure, as you know, and many of your listeners know, Operation Legend was, you know, a joint federal initiative, FBI, DOJ, ATF, that I believe it was in 9 cities, including Chicago and I believe St. Louis and a number of other cities, where, I mean, they were having issues with crime within the cities. It was named after Legend Taliaferro, who I think was shot, not intentionally, but was the victim of a drive-by shooting. And the purpose of it was to get guns off the street, to get violent criminal suspects off the street. And I think over the course of 5-6 months, there were over 450 homicide arrests, a number of arrests for illegal guns, and, you know, those types of things that really impact communities on a granular level. Because here's the problem, and this is a problem on the left and the right. When both sides of the aisle think about the black communities and black populations, they see, in relation to public safety, they see black people as primarily victims of a racist criminal justice system,
mm-hmm.
and not victims of violent crime.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I would flip it on its head. I'm not arguing against the First Step Act, but if I'm a person who lives in Philadelphia or Atlanta or Baltimore or New York City, and I'm seeing the bodies piling up in terms of homicides, and all of the homicide victims are young black males, I want to know what the federal response is going to be as it relates to crime in my neighborhood, and not just when the shooter is a deranged, racist, white supremacist. You can't just come around
and say that one matters more.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
So I would sort of, you know, massage my messaging in that way. But again, to be clear, there is a fairly significant segment of the black community who feels, look, we do share the less values on abortion, on LGBT issues. And those people you're never going to get. But you can get the people who are more socially conservative, and you can get men. Because the Democratic Party is turning in basically to the women's labor and perpetual support party. It is a party that is going to drive away men, starting with straight white males, and certainly right behind them will be straight black men as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. That you know, the endangered class in the future is going to be heterosexual white guys, closely followed by heterosexual black guys.
Correct.
I'm Sebastian Gorka. Follow this man at Delano Squires. Read his writings. You can see them previously at The Federalist, now at The Blaze, as contributor to Fearless with Jason Whitlock. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, One on One. Prison culture is no different from any other culture. The brokenness that lands people in prison, if left unaddressed, often perpetuates a cycle of destructive thinking and behavior that will negatively impact individuals for generations upon generations, unless something happens to intervene to change that cycle. The good news is that something is the Prison Fellowship Academy program. Since 1997, the fellowship has been transforming prison culture one changed life at a time. The Prison Fellowship Academy offers prisoners hope for a new life. When they are released, they will be ready to return to society as fruitful citizens, better spouses, parents, and employees. God is at work throughout the entire prison system, thanks to the Prison Fellowship Academy. I'll be telling you some inspirational stories from the program in the days ahead. But to learn more right now, please go to sebgorka.com. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com, and click on the Present Fellowship banner. Thank you, all of you, for your support.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Delano, I'm going to play a little bit of a devil's advocate here, because you talked about First Step versus Operation Legend. Mm-hmm. But before that, I asked about how you relate as a conservative mm-hmm. to a black community. I said, forget about party affiliation. Look at values. What values do you have? And does that other person have the same values? Okay, I'm going to use that yardstick mm-hmm. to talk about crime in the black community. Because let's be honest, we can have mass shootings in New York or even in a Taiwanese church in California, but it's 9,000 black Americans killed by black Americans every year, which is 3,000 more than were killed in Vietnam, black Americans. The most dangerous thing for a black young man is to be murdered by another black young man. So you're an expert on gun violence, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But to say that the federal government should be helping in these societies, in these communities, there should be a focus on gun violence. I'm a Catholic, and there's a beautiful Catholic word called subsidiarity, which says, if there's a real problem, fix it where it's happening. No. Don't wait for Uncle Sam. What the hell does Uncle Sam know about, you know, the South Side of Chicago? What does he know about the Crips and the Bloods in L.A.? Mm-hmm. And for me, as a big gun guy myself, I think focusing on the guns is irrelevant. It goes back to your initial point. It's the values. What are the values in that society? Is it cool for a 16-year-old kid to be carrying an unlicensed weapon tucked into his pants? Cool. Yet, no, what the feds do is really irrelevant unless you come down like the hammer of hell and say, okay, you're 16 years old, carrying an unlicensed weapon, that's 20 years to life, which I don't think changes values in a culture. Yeah. So can I suggest flipping it on its head and to say, what have you seen as the best way to morph values in those cultures where the wrong things are cool, yeah. Delano?
That's a great question. I agree with your general premise that many of the issues that we talk about in our country are not and cannot be solved with the federal government primarily. The government may have some ability to help at the margins, right? I only mentioned Operation Legend because oftentimes what will happen, and this happened even, you know, in the wake of the Buffalo massacre, is I will see, you know, certain black commentators, journalists say, well, where's our executive order, in the same way that the president right. did after the shooting in Atlanta at the, you know, Asian spa. And my position is, if the federal government is going to marshal its resources, I'd rather they marshal them in this particular way to fight crime. But going back to the question you asked, I believe in order, in the natural order.
Ordered liberty, like the U.S. Constitution.
Moral order, social order, and public order. And there are different parts of the body politic, right? There's family, there's community, there's faith institutions, and then there's government. So what our consciences will not constrain and our families cannot contain, eventually the government has to step in and detain. So what you see by the time the government has to step in, whether it's police or other law enforcement agencies, is a number of other things that have failed to take place.
Correct.
Across the culture. And this is regardless of race, yeah, right? Because even whether it's this shooter, whether it's the homicide victims, you know, in urban areas, whether it's the deaths of despair or suicides in white rural areas, there are certain things that are not happening, particularly in American families, because as the family is broken down,
yeah,
disorder has been released into the culture.
Right. And let's remind all of our millions of listeners and viewers that it's no accident that the element carved off the BLM website, right, after it was made a big issue of was the line which said we need to attack and dismantle the nuclear family.
Correct.
As if the nuclear family in the black community hadn't suffered enough.
Right.
Okay. All right. So let's, first things first, let me ask you, how did you get to have your values? How did Delano Squires get to have his non-chocolate covered, non-Marxist values? And have you paid a penalty for the views that you have?
So I'll go with the first question first. I mean, I got my values from my parents. All right. I grew up in New York City. So
did you have a dad at home?
Yes. So my parents have been married, this year will be 41 years.
Nice.
So they immigrated from the West Indies. You know, they married here in the States. And I also grew up, and I'll say this is important, because sometimes when conservatives hear the term, it takes a village to raise a child, they immediately think Marxist indoctrination. But that's not how I grew up. When I think it takes a village to raise a child, I'm thinking about my extended family, yeah, my church family.
Your grandma, your cousins, your aunts, your uncles.
Correct.
Right.
And all of those
people. Not the state.
Correct.
Okay.
All of those people had a hand in raising me. So I grew up, you know, with my parents, my extended family, with an extended church family, people who I've known my entire life. And these values were pressed into me and my best friends. I remember Sunday school, the gentleman who was teaching it, I remember him telling us distinctly that a man that does not take care of his own household is worse than an infidel, worse than an unbeliever.
Wow.
So, and I may have been 10, 12 years old, because out of my four friends, I'm the youngest. And that stuck with us. And now out of the four of us, three of us are married. We have eight children across, and all of whom born within the context of marriage. And we get to enjoy seeing our parents enjoy their role now as grandparents. So I grew up in the type of village that I think that proverb speaks to.
And is it hard to have the values you have today as a black American?
No, not at all. Because
you don't pay a price?
I might. It's not a price that... my mind paying is not one that matters. I mean, I have a lovely wife. We've been married almost 10 years. We have three children. I have a very fulfilling personal life. I have family that love me and support me, even when they disagree with me. But I also know that, for instance, I'll give you a quick example. The barbershop I go to, right? None of the guys there would say that they're Trump fans. But as I talk to them and I ask them, what are your values?
Mm-hmm.
I'm to the point where there are people who would say, I would never vote for Trump, who are sharing my Blaze articles with their friends and their family.
But that's a problem, because for me, that's the issue of the last 2 years, mm-hmm, which is a lack of courage. It's like, you know, when I went to a GOP event, mm-hmm, and a woman ran up to me and asked for a selfie, and I said, sure. And I gave her, you know, the selfie, and then I said, don't forget to tag me. Mm-hmm. And this woman at a GOP MAGA gala said, ooh, I can't do that,
yeah,
because Virginia's so left. And something died, I mean, inside of me. either you're a conservative and you believe your values or you don't, right? So the disconnect between what they're telling you offline, sharing the articles, and what they're prepared to say publicly, those things should be together. Okay, let me ask a second question.
But can I respond to that?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think part of it is that they don't perceive themselves as conservative.
Right. I can understand that, but then I ask the question, why? Who has indoctrinated them to a point where they can hold really core conservative values, but then not connect that to the self-image of being a conservative?
Yeah, and that's a good question. And I mean, there are all different reasons why that can take place over, you know, a course of time. Part of it is if you grew up in an area that is all blue.
Yeah.
You don't have any conservatives to vote for.
Right.
But I will say this. The most effective ambassadors for conservatism are the far left.
Especially in the last 16 months. Yeah.
Right? We've seen that with school choice.
Right.
We've seen that with libs of TikTok.
Yes.
These are the types of things that will turn guys that go to my barbershop.
And the guys that are harassing judges outside their homes.
Correct.
All right. Let me ask you this question. We had Dr. Ben Carson on my Newsmax show yesterday, and his story of growing up, single mother, I think five kids, but his mother, you know, every day said, okay, how many chapters of this book have you read? Give me a report.
Right.
And he didn't know that he was illiterate until he was like 12 or 14.
Yeah.
Talk to us about how education fits into this. How poorly served has that 12% of the American population been by the public education system, for example?
Very poorly served. And I'm a person who, I mean, I grew, I went to Catholic school for 2 years through K through 12. But every other year, the other 10, I was in a public school. And I thought I did get a very good education. I never felt like I was being preached to in terms of politics. But as I grew and mature and grew in my faith, I started to see education as equal parts scholarship and discipleship, right? Mm-hmm. So academic mastery and moral formation. And the current education system is failing all students, but particularly black students, on both accounts. This is part of the reason why you see so many urban school districts moving into the political indoctrination, because they can't they're failing at teaching, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic. So now they've jumped onto something else. So I think I'm a big proponent of school choice, but I also know that school choice is not the magic bullet, because if all of the schools are teaching race essentialism and sexual orientation and gender ideology, then you're still choosing among schools who don't understand their core mission.
Right.
I think the biggest problem with education, public education today, is that the people who run it fundamentally misunderstand their authority. They think our children belong to them.
Correct.
And that we are allies with them in the education process. And part of that is our fault as parents, because we have discharged that responsibility onto the school blindly, right? And now we're trying to get it back. And you know how it is whenever somebody tries to take back power that they've given to somebody else, it's always a fight. Yeah. And that's one of the things that you see here. So I'm a big proponent of, you know, school choice. My wife and I, we actually homeschool. We made that decision a couple years ago. But, you know, co-ops, voucher programs, being in D.C., knowing
school choice.
Right. But I want to say something about D.C. because I think this brings home the bankruptcy of our current political culture. Right. D.C. voted at least 94% for Biden.
Correct.
Harris ticket. D.C. is also the only jurisdiction that has a federally funded voucher program called the D.C. Opportunity Scholarship. I guarantee you that there are black parents who voted for Biden-Harris with the thought that I'm glad that my VP looks like me, right? Mm-hmm. Under the notion that representation matters, who did not know that that administration, when it comes to education, wants to kill the voucher program that that family is using to educate their children.
The federal government wants to kill the D.C. program?
President Obama wanted to kill it in 2008 when he came in.
Right.
He was unsuccessful because I think John Boehner and blocked him. President Trump, I think, increased funding for it. And then before President Biden came in, the National Education Association outlined their education priorities, and one of those things was to kill that program. And in I believe the budget proposal that was submitted for 2023, it includes ending the DC Opportunity Scholarship Program.
But if it ends, will there be any political consequences? Will that voter say, oh, I voted for the wrong ticket?
That's a good question. And to me, that's one thing that the local GOP or local conservatives should use as a way to reach parents and say, look, you think that it matters that they look like you, but they don't share your values. They send their kids to Sidwell and they won't even let you get a $10,000 scholarship to send your kid to a private school.
Bingo. Yeah. Bingo. You've nailed it. Okay. Dear friends, if you didn't see the 400 movie theaters showing 2,000 Mules last weekend, you've got to stream it, order the DVD. It has broken all records. And now Dinesh has dropped the price. I'm vested in this. I have a stake in it. It's such an important venture. Go to salemnow.com. Stream a movie that has broken all records, over 1 million downloads in the first 6 days. That's salemnow.com, produced by Salem Media Group. Okay, you made a kind of, it's been a fun interview. I could continue for hours, but you made a kind of little barb about my former boss saying, I wasn't called up 5 years ago. Well, we can probably change that. So let's play play a little scenario planning.
Okay.
And my former boss runs. I know he's running. We secure the election and he wins. He's back in the White House. It is January the 21st, 2025. If it's not the First Step Act, give us the two things, the two things that the black community deserve from the next conservative president.
So here's how I would answer that question. I'm going to add one more.
Yeah.
I'm going to quote the great Thomas Sowell, who said he was giving a speech and he said, you know, a lot of liberals congratulate themselves on things that they've done for the black community. But when you destroy the family, education, and law and order, there's nothing left. Yeah. And nothing you can do can replace those things. So for me, it would be focusing policy to the extent possible on restoring, reviving, and strengthening the nuclear family, the natural family, as I call it, improving education, right? Which, again, always going to mean working with parents and children, not the government coming in and dictating where kids can go to school, and then restoring moral, social, and public order.
But to go back to the point, I mean, you're a conservative. I think you like this concept of subsidiarity. Aren't there limits to what the feds can do about families and education and moral order?
Absolutely. But here's how I would answer that question, right? The federal government is already involved in family policies.
And screwing it up and giving the reverse incentive.
There you go. So what I would say is, instead of lamenting, oh, well, we got what we paid for, why don't you pay for what you want? Right. I'm thinking, and I'm sure you would appreciate this. I'm thinking of how Hungary has
the tax credits for married couples.
There you go. There you go. So part of it, and here's how I would say it, both within policy in the political realm and the cultural realm. You can move the needle through the pen, the purse, and the pulpit. So that's whether that's in the political realm, that's legislation, that's funding programs, and that's using the bully pulpit to say these things are important. And to me, the most important thing, the fundamental building block of any civil society is the natural family.
Yes.
So I think having a president who can articulate that clearly and consistently, there are other people who live their lives in all different types of ways, but only one type of pairing produces children. So I would hammer that as much as possible. And again, provide incentives, tax credits, tax rebates, whatever it is. When a couple files their marriage license on every anniversary, you can provide voucher programs, voucher schemes, or
credits,
credits for families who want to homeschool, and say, look, we would have paid $12,000 a year for you in your jurisdiction, right? And this could be partnership between federal and local government, but if you want to be a homeschool family, that's fine. We'll give you a third of that, because to your point, you don't want to incentivize the wrong type of social ordering and behavior, like what we did with welfare policy, where you provide an incentive for women to have children
out of wedlock.
Out of wedlock. So what I'm saying is prime the pump in a way that moves, understanding that we can't solve all problems, but at least moves the citizenry in the right direction. And I think that's the type of policy that would benefit every community.
Well, you've given me a third thing I'm going to use with full credit. I like this. Not traditional, but natural family. I Correct. Love that, Delano Squires. Find out more. Listen to this guy. Follow him. He is the contributor for Fearless with Jason Whitlock, also at Delano Squires. I'm Sebastian Gorka. You've been listening to One-on-One. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
Fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Trust me, boys can't get periods.
Brian, it's 2022. There's no such thing as a boy anymore, or a girl. Just a vast sea of chubby theys and thems, so coddled by their sanctimonious woke parents who think activism is virtue signaling on Instagram. If Martin Luther King could come back and see what they were doing in his name, he'd never stop throwing up.
I don't know why the baby has a British accent. I'm not sure I've ever seen an episode of The Family Guy, but that's rather good. Thank you, Jeff, for finding that. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Happy Monday to you. I hope you had a glorious weekend. It was rather hot and then stormy here in the swamp. I had quite the Saturday accompanying my wife to the election event for her latest endeavor. We will get to that momentarily. But what do you need to know? We have a roster of superlative guests today from Kash Patel, Eric Greitens, John Solomon, Margot Cleveland, and also, well, somebody who is fighting the swamp and making sure that the diversity goals of the left aren't quite as effective as they would like them to be. But we have news, of course. Monkeypox is the next big threat. Are you ready to get triple masked and quadruple vaccinated? Where's Fauci? Oh, I think he got a couple of honorary doctorates at the weekend. If you're a college inviting Fauci to give a commencement or give him an honorary doctorate, you may wish to think twice about giving money to that college after your son or daughter graduated this weekend. Biden has done it again. I forgot the first instance of when he put his foot into it a year ago. He's done it again, talking about how the U.S. military will defend Taiwan from communist China. Of course, the White House had to try and pick up the pieces of that statement after his multiple gaffes in Europe with regards to Ukraine. I guess they're getting used to it. Don't worry about baby formula. Biden has deployed the U.S. military to bring 70,000 pounds of baby formula from Europe, which will last us, given the average intake of newborn formula in America, 2 days. Yes, 2 days. Then what happens? The Sussman trial is getting ever more interesting. And then perhaps the biggest news of the day for the MAGA audience that is America First, Mike Pence, according to his staff, is considering running for president of the United States. What do you think of that? Give us a call. The number here, I know you have an opinion on that one, is 833-33-GORKA. That's unleash the calls. That's open the lines. 833-334-6752. That's 833-334-6752. Okay, let's talk about the interesting weekend my wife and I had. After the local community center and library decided that transgenderism is what the local community is interested in and decided to host a drag queen story hour for children, many people said, no, that's wrong. That isn't diversity. That is grooming. That is attempting to sexualize and undermine young children, minors. My wife, who'd eschewed active politics for a decade of me trying to encourage her, suddenly said to me one day, 2-3 months ago, I'm going to run for the school board, for the community center board, and I've already put in my application. I was stunned, I was floored, I was impressed. And she worked hard. Here's a photograph of her, Katie, this weekend at the McLean Day celebrations, which is when the community votes for their community center board. Three positions were open, 9 candidates, and Katie was the only conservative, thank you, Eric, of 9 candidates. Let's just stop there for a second. That, in a nutshell, is the challenge. We don't even have to get into deep discussions on critical race theory, critical theory, queer theory, James Lindsay's book, Chris Rufo's work. No, forget about the deep dive. In a local community center election in the richest county in America, there are 9 people running and 1 conservative. Why is that? If you're a conservative listening in Fairfax County and McLean, why didn't you run? I think I'm going to run next time. I think Katie should run again because she didn't win, although amazing result in an election that usually garners 1,000 votes. That's another indictment, I guess, of American politics. 1,000 people vote in that community center election. She got 600 votes. Great result. First time she's run for anything. However, there were 2,000 early votes this year. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that redolent? Doesn't that echo with regards to 2020? 2,000 early votes in an election that in toto usually has 1,000 people bothered to vote. Of course, the Democrat-anointed slate of 3 individuals, radicals, won, naturally, because where are the conservatives? We drew the requisite lessons. My wife is more energized than ever. But here's a story I want to share with you from that day. We were outside in 93-degree heat for 6 hours, encouraging voters, telling them about my wife's platform. When a woman who was loitering at our table for the longest time as we were talking to a real conservative started to bait us, she said, I'm not voting for you, but I want to know what your policies are. And then she did the guilt by association. I was standing next to my wife and she said, I'm going to vote against you because of him. I joined the conversation. Because of me? Why, pray tell? Because I'm afraid of you. You frighten me. I looked you up. And your stance on what America should be is frightening. And I said, oh, really? At which point she lectured me about her credentials. I'm a PhD. Yeah, great. So what? So am I. I dug a little deeper. So what is it that frightens you about me? What do you know about me? At which point this white liberal PhD said, "Well, I've looked you up on Wikipedia." There you have it. America has a race problem. Its race problem is white liberals. PhD or not, male or female, but white liberals who think they're educated and think an argument is won because of something they read on Wikipedia. That is an organ of propaganda in which anybody can write anything, but if you challenge it as a conservative, as I did once I joined the White House and all kinds of smears were written on my Wikipedia page, what did they do? They locked the page from further editing. After our conversation, do you know how she ended it? She said, "I'm so afraid that my husband and our children, we're probably going to leave America for Europe." With one footnote, she just had to add, I don't know if she knows about my background, she said, "but the one place we're not going is Hungary." I'm sure President Viktor Orban is happy about that. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. Be sure that you are subscribed. Go to Spotify. Look up America First. It's free. Write a review. Share the links. Never miss an episode. We'll be back in a moment.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.